here we go again, it's the game we love.
Play game.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only live board game radio show.
Until proven otherwise.
A show about board games and trying to figure out if any games are cosplay worthy. I'm one of your hosts, Nate, and with me is my buddy James. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good today. How are you, Nate?
I'm doing all right. And this is where I'm going to jump in before we've even introduced our guest and ask Vincent of GameStorm. This is why you introduce people first. Do people cosplay at board game conventions?
It's pretty rare, but it does happen.
Okay.
I think you got to think about if there's a board game famous enough or if characters distinct enough that if you dressed up as them, you would get noticed.
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is people coming as meeples, but then there's the RPG world where I'm sure it's a lot more expansive for dressing up.
We're going to spend half an hour on this.
Yeah. As a reminder, you can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system on kboo.fm. Just click on the chat with us button in the lower right corner of the window. We are pleased to welcome Vincent Metal, the director of outreach for GameStorm, Portland's local board game convention. GameStorm is happening this weekend, running from March 19th to March 22nd. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, do a little introduction, get to know you a little bit. I know when we talked before, you said board gaming wasn't really your hobby, but you did get into RPGs. So how did you get into board gaming / RPGs?
So I got into gaming from my uncle, who taught me like Magic the Gathering and Advanced Dungeons and Dragons because he was into that sort of thing. I liked to read, and he didn't have a lot of people he knew that played those games. So I started getting into role-playing games and realized how much I loved and missed the sort of communal storytelling.
So how did you move from playing with your uncle to finding your own gaming group for these RPGs?
Well, I am a little bit on the older side, so tabletop role-playing games weren't really a very popular hobby to have when I was coming up. But I met some folks late in middle school who I ended up playing with all through high school, and we started sort of together reaching out and exploring beyond Dungeons & Dragons to other tabletop role-playing games. Like so many other people, one of my first non-D&D role-playing games was Vampire the Masquerade, and we all sort of fell in love with the White Wolf system, but all of us with very different parts of it. So everyone in my group sort of had their game that was their game. Like, one of my buddies, his game was Vampire the Masquerade. Another one of my guys got into Werewolf the Apocalypse pretty hard. I was Mage the Ascension from the moment I picked up that book.
I think Vampire the Masquerade is like one of the only other tabletop RPGs I've played apart from D&D.
Yeah.
Do you have, maybe it's still the same, do you have a favorite RPG system that, or one that you think everyone needs to try?
My favorite role-playing game and the game I think everyone should try are definitely not the same thing. Mage the Ascension does tend to be a little bit high complex, or high, what's the word I'm looking for? High concept, there we go. And requires a lot of non-linear thinking. I don't think it's definitely the game for everybody, it just happens to be my favorite. I'd say the game I think everyone needs to try is one I discovered recently called Winnie the Owl Pooh Adventures in the D100 Acre Woods.
I'm assuming that's come out since Winnie the Pooh hit the public domain.
I'm actually not 100% certain that's true.
3 years? Yeah. Do you get to play as like Winnie the Pooh and the 100 Acre Woods characters? I'm fascinated by this now.
It's a very bizarre game, but it's something that I picked up as just sort of for the memes. I collect weird, obscure role-playing games.
Oh, yeah.
My goal is to one day have a digital copy of every role-playing game ever made.
That sounds very ambitious.
We're the collection I have, we call it the archive, I know it's not very original, is almost up to half a terabyte at this point, which in PDFs is a lot of books.
That is. And you're not even like halfway through all the RPGs.
I don't know how to play, I would say, even 5% of them.
Well, thank you for that, Vincent. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what GameStorm is and how long you've been involved with it?
So GameStorm started out as a board game convention and has grown to encompass all aspects of gaming. We have tabletop role-playing games, both casual and organized play. We have live-action role-playing. We have a creation station, children's activities, miniatures. All things gaming for four solid days, we've got it. I've been involved with GameStorm since, I believe, 2014, I want to say. 2012, one of the two. And I had some folks come up when I was doing a public Pathfinder Society game, one of the people in charge of the local community, and said, hey, do you guys want to come DM at GameStorm for us? I said, what's a GameStorm? They're like, it's a convention. I'm like, oh, I don't like conventions. That's not my thing. But my wife convinced me to go along. At the time, she was my girlfriend. And she was like, no, this is a thing I do. You should come out. So I did that for a while and have moved around to a lot of different departments.
So you said like the GameStorm now encompasses, it used to be about board games, now it encompasses many aspects of board games, as in tabletops and everything. How do you make sure there's enough space for every aspect of the hobby world in one convention?
So we take place at the what used to be the Jansen Beach Red Line, now it's called the Holiday Inn Columbia Riverfront, I believe. And we take over literally the whole hotel. Even the suites become event space for us. So we manage to pack things into every nook and cranny of that entire hotel complex that we possibly can. We are expanding this year our console and land video gaming area to a larger space, and also one with better power drops. And we've grown our LARP department significantly as well into two very large spaces. But we constantly find more ways to cram more content into the same amount of space.
I remember going up there a couple of years ago for a math trade, and it was just being hosted in a hotel room, and it was more games that I've ever seen piled up in a space with, and it was filled with people too, and it's so funny seeing the hotel repurposed as this sort of bazaar of like games that had already been traded and were just waiting for people to pick them up.
Yeah. That would have been the one where we did the math trade in Suite 266, just off one of the hallways. I was the head of events that year, actually.
You guys saying math trade? Like,
yeah.
Like you trade numbers?
We have discussed math trades a little bit before on the show. But it's basically an algorithm-driven trade system where you put the games up that you want to trade, and then you put the games up that are in the system that you would receive in return for them, and then a computer algorithm runs to maximize the number of trades. So you don't know exactly what you're going to get, but you're going to get something you want if you get anything at all, I guess.
I think they need to find a better name for that. Was that a reason to keep people who don't know about it out? Like, I don't want to do a trade of numbers and never find the fun in it.
I'm going to be honest. I may have misunderstood what a math trade is.
Oh.
I set up that event. I was not actually involved in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
So they definitely should change the name of it.
Maybe, but they are the best things. And I honestly think more collector hobby things should take this and use it, like trading records or trading whatever you collect, because it is just a very cool and fun thing to do. And you can actually get some surprisingly good deals, especially when someone sets up their math trade wrong and they accidentally misvalue what they're putting up. And like someone got a game I had worth $100 for the equivalent of me trading for a $30 game. And I was like, whoops, oh well, so be it. You kind of touched on this, but like, you weren't a convention person and you weren't a board game person. So like, what kept you there?
So the first couple years I was there, I was doing Pathfinder Society because my brother and I were already running Pathfinder Society anyways. Well, myself and two of my brothers were involved in the actual event that we did. And so we got together and we're like, oh, well, you know, we're going to do something different next year. And my older brother got really into Dragon Dice, which is a collectible dice game by SFR. It was originally released by TSR, sort of an answer to Magic the Gathering.
How many dice could there possibly be? Are there just different pictures on them?
So the different pictures, different colors, things like that, and they represent different units.
A lot of dice goblins out there must have loved that game.
I believe so. So I did that for a couple years, and then this guy walks up to me that I was certain I had never seen before in my life. And he says, hey, I heard you can move heavy boxes. I said, well, who are you? He says, my name's Eamon. Like, I don't feel like you've answered the question I'm asking you. And we go back and forth with me asking him more specific questions and him giving me less helpful answers until eventually he says, Bunny sent me. That's my wife. And I'm like, you should have led with that. He says, can you move heavy boxes quickly? Because I didn't think this was going to take so long. And so he takes me into this room, and there's these pop-up pavilions set up, except they don't have the roofs on them. And I think that's kind of weird, but it's also indoors, so I guess they don't need the roofs. And some of the smaller boxes contained non-fitted bed sheets in various colors, like a true assortment of colors. And he says, hey, I need you to help me hang these off of these frames. And so I do, and I'm confused. I have no idea what's going on in this room. And eventually we get these set up, and it creates functionally the illusion of separate rooms inside of a larger ballroom. And he says to me, cool, thanks for helping me set up this LARP. And I'm like, wait, I was just involved in a LARP? I don't want a LARP.
You already did it.
And so I was hanging out with them and a bunch of other people at the end of the weekend. I was decided I didn't want to do Dragon Dice. And they say, well, you're in the LARP department now. I'm like, but LARPing is stupid. And they're like, that's fine. More LARPing for the rest of us. You can work the desk during the LARPs we all want to go to. I'm like, okay, cool. And then I ended up in charge of the LARP department because I foolishly asked who was in charge of the LARP department next year, and everyone suddenly starts touching the end of their nose. I'm like, what's, oh God, nose goes, right. From there, I moved up to being head of events, which is in charge of all of the event departments, like role-playing, board games, the various departments. Then was the chairperson, and since then, for the last 2 years, and again next year, has been confirmed, I'm the head of outreach. So I come and talk to people about GameStorm.
Nice. Well, congratulations on that. I want to dive back a bit for the LARPing. Is it just when you put LARPing in a convention hall, because I know usually it's outside, is it just one room full of a random bunch of people running around trying to hit each other?
So I always tell people that 90% of the LARP setup is creating the illusion of additional spaces. That's what's going on with the pop-up pavilions. We're creating sort of private areas that can be decorated to look like, you know, the different rooms on a starship or, you know, a meeting hall or something along those lines. And there's a larger communal area where other things will go on. With the ability to pick up very cheap pop-up pavilions and to go buy out all of the non-fitted sheets at the Goodwill. Which, sorry if anybody's ever gone to the Goodwill and tried to buy non-fitted sheets only to find they aren't there. That's probably my fault. And yeah, we create the illusion of additional spaces, which grants us the ability to diversify an environment. It's also worth noting that the LARPs we do aren't what most people think of when they think of LARPs. You think of people like hitting each other with padded sticks, yeah. I'm sure. Those are what we call full contact LARPs. And we don't do full contact LARPs. What we do are what we are commonly referred to as parlor LARPs, which are more sort of intrigue and like story focused rather than focusing on the ability to hit somebody with a padded stick. It's a little bit like improv theater from what I've been told.
I mean, that sounds more interesting to me.
You should definitely come out.
Oh, I'll just appear there, take a bed sheet with me.
So we're going to do a quick reset, but I do just want to pitch parlarps instead of parlor LARPs. Parlarps. Just mull it over. All right, we're going to reset real quick. Nobody liked it. You're listening to 90.7 KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias, a show about the board gaming hobby. We're talking with Vincent Metal about GameStorm, which is happening this weekend. And before we move on, we're in the midst of our Radio Ahead special programming season, where we have extra special programming, like a metal marathon, not related to Vincent, starting on March 20th and going through the wee hours of the morning to the 21st, which is naturally followed up by a bluegrass marathon a few hours later on the 21st. I also want to shout out some other great KBOO shows, like Biscando America on Tuesdays from noon to 1:30, which always brings good vibes and surprises, and Genius Box on Fridays at 8 a.m. featuring a guest of the show and KBOO News Director Althea Billings and her co-host Reed Johnson. They comment on local news stories in a fun and insightful way, often mocking the absurdity of the stories. I think I want to get to this one first. So there's been a pretty dramatic change in the board gaming hobby in recent years, but historically, the hobby hasn't been the most welcoming place. Use the phrase when we talked previously, exclusive because of exclusion. Could you explain what you mean by that and how GameStorm is trying to create more inclusion in the hobby?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a lot of people who grew up in like the sort of games community in general, who are a little on the older side, will remember how sort of stigmatized the hobby was, either board gaming or tabletop role-playing games or CCGs or whatever it was they were into. And the sort of culture in general around those things has definitely started to change. Now, being into tabletop role-playing games is considered cool. You know, playing D&D with your friends is something that people who in a lot of ways are like folks who would have at one point made fun of us now consider to be almost a mark of pride. And so the way that gaming culture has changed to be more inclusive as a whole of just people, or more to the point, people being more accepting of it, GameStorm is trying to shift with that. There was a time when, because of how poorly treated folks were over being involved in this hobby, that they tended to be very insular and very, I don't think xenophobic is quite the right word, but sort of gives the same vibe, really, of not wanting other people to know about this thing they're doing and this sort of mystique around it. And times have changed. Culture has changed, both popular culture and gaming culture. And there has been a lot of resistance that I've seen over my years for people who want to keep that sort of exclusivity because they're used to being rejected. And GameStorm is trying to make itself a place where people feel welcome to come and enjoy whatever nerd stuff they're into, right? They don't, if you're into board games, cool. If you're into video games, that's cool too. Like, that doesn't make you any less of a gamer. I think that as a culture, those of us who identify ourselves as gamers need to stop trying to gatekeep who gets to be a gamer and who doesn't. And that's what we're moving towards with GameStorm, is we want to not have that has no place with us.
That's why I let James talk about video games sometimes.
Yeah, so I have a place.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to bring up, because like video games has always had a pretty bad exclusion area to it, of like, you can't be a gamer, you're not a guy or whatever. And I'm so glad that they're now moving away from that. But there's always going to be the outlier of people who hate to see their hobbies move forward and get better because they wanted to keep it to themselves. Is there anything GameStorm is able to do to make sure those outliers don't damage it for the rest of the people in the convention?
Quite frankly, we don't want them there.
Yeah.
Like, if people are going to decide that the only way they can have fun is for other people to not be allowed to have fun, they can't be at my convention.
Which I love that.
We don't need their money that bad. We're a nonprofit organization. All of our money left over at the end of the year gets split between our parent organization, OSFCI, and a charity of the chair's choice. This year, our funds are going to Boys and Girls Club.
And how do you decide who you're going to be donating to?
Every year, somebody or multiple somebodies will put in a bid for being the chair of GameStorm. The board of directors decides on which of those bids gets approved, and the person in question who becomes the chairperson for that year's GameStorm gets to pick. Okay. It just has to be an actual charity. So like the year that I was chair, we donated an absolutely obscene amount of money to Outside In. Last year, I believe the charity of the chair's choice was New Avenues for Youth, both of which are Portland local institutions.
Yeah. Awesome.
So now we've heard about all the great things GameStorm is doing. I want to learn a bit more about what, like, the inside of GameStorm. Like, you have all these things going on at GameStorm. How is it laid out in a way that is easy for people to walk around and, like, figure out what they want to do?
So our main draw has always been board games, and I think our main draw always will be board games. And so there's an area, it's called the Grand Ballroom. It's called that because it's four ballrooms that we take the air walls down in between. And that's our main board gaming area. It's also where miniatures is, our game labs, which helps folks in the process of creating their own game, allowing them to do play tests or helping them with resources for publishing or things like that. Everything else is just sort of like in the spaces it's in. Like, there are directions. We have signage all over the place pointing you to where you're looking for. So, like, you go to the lower lobby if you're looking for... this year will be where Console and Land Video Gaming is, or our Dealer's Hall, which is also expanded this year. We have various businesses and individuals who come and sell the things that they make or the games that they provide.
So... You are your focus is more on like play than sales, because there's like a variation in all the gaming conventions of focus. So
I've definitely been to some gaming conventions where there are some games you can play, but mostly you're just there to buy stuff. Our Dealer's Hall, I won't say it's been an afterthought historically, but it's never our main draw. Like, our dealers do relatively well. They tend to try and come back year over year. And I have found some absolutely fantastic stuff in that over the years. I found this role-playing game last year. I think it's called The Magical Lands of Yeld. And it's sort of a coming-of-age role-playing game with a job system that's really cool. I usually go down there and buy at least one set of dice every year. You know, we have people who are not only selling games or games accessories, but also like crafts and things like that that they've made.
So like in your one of the, I've only ever been to PAX. That's my main convention I go to. So I can only talk about conventions that way. in your board game area, do you have like a board game library that people can come and like borrow board games and play there?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an absolutely massive board game library, and it's the way that it's arrayed is basically by like type of game and then alphabetically. Like, you know, your cooperative games are over here, your resource management games are over here in this aisle, stuff like that. And folks can just go through, they grab the game they want, they go up to the counter, we take down their badge number so we know who checked it out, and then they just bring it back when they're done. We have a pretty large open play area where you can just go and play the game with your friends, or if there's a game that you're interested in that you don't have people to play with, we have these little orange cones, and you just put those at the end of your table, and it indicates that you're looking for more players.
We are just about out of time, but I do want to give you a chance to give us all the details about GameStorm, how people can attend, all that stuff. So if you got it in there, we want to hear it.
So, as we mentioned, GameStorm is March 19th through the 22nd, so it starts on Thursday, even though for a lot of us it starts tomorrow. We just put our day badges on sale as well if people want to just come out and check it out for a day. Those vary between $25 and $35, depending on which day it is. And it's an absolute blast. We have more content this year than we have had ever. And our convention is just continuing to grow, and we want it to do that, but we also want it to continue to feel like a place that is a quintessentially Pacific Northwest gaming convention.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Vincent, for being here. And I got to get on my outro. Thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. And you can find us on Instagram at winnersbias. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. We want to remind you that KBU is a volunteer-powered community platform. That means we are funded by you, the listener. Just go to kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but how you get into hobbies by going to their conventions. Have a good one.
Keep our minds on the game.
All the games.
Games people play now.